doing contract.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, it's 12 o'clock, so if I can call you to attention, it's 12 o'clock, let's start so we can finish on time and have adequate time for presentations. Do we have a quorum? Somebody keeping count of that?
I can do roll call and find out if everyone is here. Axelban?
Axelban here.
Mr. Arias? Mr. Anderson? Stuart Law? Stuart Law is here? L-A-F-F? Mr. Sagusi? Donna Smith? Don Schwartz? Eto McClatchy?
Yes.
Bob Courtney? Richard? Jaden? That's him. And David Como? Okay, so we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
Okay, so we have a quorum back. The first item on this agenda, Nancy's not here, I'm filling in for her, is the, well, are there any people here who have not been here who want to introduce themselves so we can know who they are? Please.
Yes, I'm Robert Bobby Arias. Somebody knows me as Robert. I'm representing Mission College, a longtime resident of L.A., and attended Valley College, which was my second chance, and was able to achieve multiple graduate degrees at USC, and I owe all that to my community college experience. So I'm happy to be here.
Nice story. Glad to hear. Living evidence.
That's right. Try to be.
That's great. We have some, as the first item here, Nancy has provided some dates for our future meetings. I guess if somebody has difficulty with these, then I guess they should provide that information, and if enough people have trouble with any one of these dates, we'll see if we can renegotiate them. But these are the dates until modified. Are there any public speakers at this meeting? Members of the public who want to address the council? Okay. And let's get on to the approval of the minutes. Discussion? Anybody have any objection to the minutes?
I move to approve.
Nope. Second. I have a comment.
Yeah, go ahead.
Having been a secretary of many organizations, I feel the minutes are too long. They don't follow parliamentary procedure. I forgot my Robert's rules with me, but they very specifically identify what should be in minutes. There's too much he said, she said, too much stated on page 8. In one paragraph, she stated is listed 9 times, which is ridiculous. These minutes shouldn't be more than 3 pages long. What you need to do is just summarize, and anything, the only, think of it in this way, 5 years from now, someone's going to be reading these minutes, they're not going to give a darn about all the he said, she said. They want to know what happened. They want to know what issues were covered. And they don't want to know who said it. And I'm requesting that from this point on, minutes be done correctly.
Okay, any discussion of this subject? Anybody want to make comments? Yes.
It seems like in the 2 years I've been here, 3 years I've been here, we have discussed what goes in minutes for at least half of our meeting time each
really?
Time. Yeah, and there's always been this discussion about should it be a brief summary, should it be verbatim, and we've kind of covered this with the fact that verbatim is in the website. You can listen to
absolutely
every last minute, but we've kind of come to the conclusion that larger than a summary is what made the committee feel happy in the past, I guess.
Well,
so are you agreeing or disagreeing with the first?
I'm disagreeing. I think we've reached kind of a happy medium, but I don't know that we're ever going to make everybody happy.
Let me just ask if anybody else has an opinion, then get back to you. Yes?
I just wanted to
ditto what Daniel, correct, what you said, because we did discuss it several times and came up with what was considered a happy meeting, too much and not enough.
Okay, any other opinions, any discussion?
Well, the only comment I have, I notice sometimes looking back at the minutes and recalling what was said at the meeting, I find there's a lot of issues missing that are not covered, and I kind of wonder if they're pre-previewed somehow or edited for some reason prior to our getting a draft.
My understanding of the process, and I participated in it, is that a draft is provided to all members that ask for their comments. And I've always found in the past, which is my experience, that whatever comments I made were included, if the word wasn't included. So that process does exist.
Yeah. Well, I found some things I've said in the past have not been.
Well, if you read the minutes, and again, I'm not being critical, but I'm saying you have the opportunity to get back before the public and provide your comments.
I understand that. Sometimes you have to listen to the tapes and actually recall exactly what you said.
Well, we have new people on the committee now,
yes,
and I think it's possible to make some changes that would be better for the group as far as what everyone's, the verbatim thing, it, to me, is ridiculous.
Okay.
There's absolutely no reason for it, and I would like to object strongly.
Well, again, I'm just trying to collect comments at this point. Does anybody else have any comments about the adequacy or inadequacy of the style of the minutes? And then more specifically, I will later ask whether we want to approve or disapprove of these minutes. Any other comments? Would you like to call the vote on this question?
Well, I have no objection to the minutes since I wasn't here because I wasn't notified about the last meeting.
You have an objection to the style of the minutes you've stated?
Oh, yes.
So I'm asking
strongly.
You or anybody else would they like to call a vote on this question or should we proceed with the specific minutes? Okay, not having heard a request for a vote. Nancy.
Continue.
Welcome back. Aloha. She just returned from Hawaii.
Thank God, I just
wanted to. You must have boarded that plane at 6 a.m. to get here at this time.
I
last night, okay. Anyway, on these minutes, then, is there a move for approval?
There's already one.
Well, but the discussion took place first.
Okay.
So there is a move. Anybody second that?
I will second it.
Call for a vote. All four. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Abstain?
Abstain.
Abstain. And I vote four also.
Abstain.
Three abstains. And the rest of the votes are four. Okay, performance audit is the next subject on the agenda, KMPG performance audit. Is there someone here to speak to that?
I'm here with KPMG. Where would you like me?
At the head of the table.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that. Good afternoon, all. My name is Tracy Hensley. I'm a partner with KPMG. I was the engagement partner for the performance of the performance audit this year. I have Pamela Storrs with me here today. She did all the work, so when you ask me her question, I'm going to ask her to come over here today. The scope of our engagement was a performance audit of the expenditures of your three bond programs, which totaled approximately $520 million for the year ended June 30, 2011. We focused on four projects at two campuses, Southwest College and Harbor College. Wanted to talk to you a little bit about the timing of the audit. Here we are in June, and this is for last June's year end. We were actually selected as auditors for this project in August of last year. Our executed contract began November 30th. We began our field work about 5 days later, and we issued our report on our procedures and our conclusions in early May. I hope that you all have a copy of that and have had a chance to look at that. If not, we might have some extra copies. Does everybody have a copy of that and have a chance to read that? It was riveting. Okay.
You're right. It's a copy of that.
I don't know if I have my list.
So, as many of you probably know, KPMG actually performs also the audit of the financial statements of the district and also provides, performs financial statement audits of the bond expenditures. The purposes of those audits is to make sure those financial statements are fairly stated, that they are complete and accurate, and everything is fairly stated. The objective of a performance audit is primarily to focus on efficiency and effectiveness of the processes associated with the bond expenditures, and to provide, reasonable assurance and some conclusions based on those procedures that we perform. As I mentioned, we did issue our report dated May 9th, hopefully you have a copy of that. These kinds of audits usually result in comments for recommendations and improvements. So I apologize in advance if it sounds negative in nature. That isn't the intent. I wanted to point out, as our report does in much more detail, that we did identify improvements that the district had made over the year since the last time. For example, the district adopted some new cost principles that were appropriate and complete. Guide for the oversight committee has been prepared, an improvement of the closeout oversight function, et cetera. So a lot of progress has taken place. My appearance here today is to discuss with you, though, the comments that we do have for improvement. We did have seven observations, and they're grouped into three categories: high priority, medium priority, and low priority. We had several recommendations. They're explained in detail again in the report. Management obviously reviewed that and agreed and provided their responses to our recommendations, so we did not have any disagreement with those recommendations. I also want to say, before I go over those, that we're greatly appreciative to the district and Bill for all their cooperation and help. We really appreciated that. We feel everything was made available to us, and we thought it went really well. Our next steps are to begin the next year's audit, which we are beginning already.
Oh, you're going to discuss your recommendations?
Yes, that's where I'm going right now. I was kind of going in order there, but I kind of screwed me up. Okay, apologize for that. So we had two items that fell into the high priority column. One was, we're recommending that the district maintain a comprehensive and complete set of policies and procedures that all of the campuses and everybody follow. There are procedures. Some were dated, some were new, some were being followed, some had their own. So we recommend that for consistency, for completeness, for all of the reasons you want consistent policies, that that be adopted.
Did you specifically specify those additional policies and procedures that were lacking that needed to be provided?
We did discuss that with management. We provided them an overview of what we
believe. Is it in writing anywhere?
I believe that's in our report.
And can you give an example of some policy or procedure that they did not have that you recommended?
Yeah,
just wanted to.
There's a draft touch point at the time of our
Can't hear you.
Can't hear you.
Sorry, there's a draft touch point, which is essentially their policies and procedures that were in place during our audit period, and we made some suggestions throughout the audit in ways to enhance control, such as be more specific about the forms that are required, the different type of approvals of different individuals. And those, I know that Bill was working on it at the present time, and we're incorporating those as they need.
What was your metric? What was your reason that set these additional things to be done?
Based on our testing and field work that we had performed, we were seeing that there were approval from different individuals and or gaps. If there's too many versions of different forms being used across the campus. So things are just trying to streamline it and make sure that everybody's using a consistent standard.
What we found as we went to campuses that they were following different standards, and it made it difficult to come up with an approach for it. And ultimately we decided we were going to use the one that was in place, good or bad, but the one that had been approved and should have been used.
Beautiful.
And I know they're making some progress on it. The second comment that we felt was a high priority are budgets and budget transfers, that they're not consistently supported by fully documented assumptions. Budgets may change. Usually they get bigger. There wasn't always a reason documented, not to say that there wasn't good reason, but documented so that somebody looking back can say, why did that change? What happened? What could we have done differently to make that different? It is a leading practice to maintain documentation of all assumptions for your original budget and for ongoing budgets, so we recommend that that take place.
How large an amount of money was not well documented? We're talking about 200 million, we're talking about 20,000. What's your range in here?
I believe, Pam, that I don't know that we quantified that.
I'll have to refer to my notes here, but based on different budget transfers that had gone on that we had actually tested, we had tested over almost 12 million, and about 4 million didn't include what we considered to be assumptions that we validated.
We're not validated.
What we do understand is when we're...
Remember, this is for 10-11 a year, not 11-12 years. So this was a year ago. This is not mentioned.
So That's right, and something also.
Are you implying there that there are now in place but not available for review improved procedures, methods, policies, accounting techniques, sign-off, which would have satisfied the audit? Were they among the documents that we reviewed?
What I'm saying is we've made a lot of changes last year, so that's not reflected in this report. So this last year, even the DCOC has made a lot of changes this last year that did not be reflected in this report.
Yeah, what I'm trying to sort out is this, though. Making changes is one thing. The important thing is the audit is valid. Do the changes that were made that were not included, or had they been included, satisfy some of the criticisms or recommendations for improvement that the audit provided?
Absolutely. The changes are the positive nature.
Are these similar? Some of these seem like similar to the comments that our investigator general made about accounting issues and following funds issues. I assume you've read those reports and that you have feeling that much of this is also shared by her research into what we're doing?
It is, and actually, we have been making this comment in connection with the bond expenditure audits for many years, that there needs to be reconciliation, that needs to be monitored. The other thing I did want to point out is these projects go on for a long time. Many of these projects that had changes in assumptions, we might be picking them now. This might have been done 5 years ago, prior to your new subcontractor program manager. So we did note that was occurring in some cases with the current folks. But again, some of these comments are because it's old stuff, just because when you pick a project, it has a long life. Okay. So I wanted to point that out. But you are right. You will note that very similar comments of that were identified in several of the reports that you've received, perhaps not just the one that you mentioned about the budgets. Our next category is of medium priority, yet still important. We didn't feel that the program had an adequate centralized scheduling function, providing oversight to the scheduling process. Leading industry practice would focus on that, scheduling management as a critical practice to making sure that from the very beginning to the very end, schedules are put in place so that you know if something is running over, if something is late, if something does need to be addressed. Good milestones, et cetera, need to be put in place. The other comment that we had were change orders and field orders didn't consistently contain adequate supporting documentation or required approval signatures. Certainly that happens when things need to occur in the field. We just feel that is a protocol, that is a policy, and should be approved before they continue on. I think everybody would agree with that.
Yeah, sounds semi-serious. Yeah.
We also noted that while there might have been a master services agreement or other kind of agreement with some sort of contractor, that activities may have begun before the work order or the contract was actually executed, signed, and put in place. In hindsight, we didn't identify any concerns or issues, but you can see how that would be an issue. If you begin work before an executed contract is in place, you will be harmed or the contractor will be harmed. It just doesn't sound good from anybody's viewpoint not to make sure you have complete agreement before you begin. Again, we didn't identify any concerns with that other than it's just designed improperly. Sometimes you have processes that are designed properly and not operating properly. Sometimes you have them that just aren't designed properly.
Tom, again, has most of this been changed this year?
We've made a lot of changes. There still are situations where the board has approved something and it takes a little bit of time to work a contract out. That's what Tracy's trying to describe. By the time the company and the district get the contract, the actual ink on the contract, they've agreed in concept, but the ink on the contract is what she's talking about. You know, so the board's approved the process and everything. It just hasn't gotten a signed contract because of, you know.
But are we starting work now still before there's a signed contract?
At this time.
Okay. There are some instances where.
Commercially, there's lien problems. Well, we don't have liens in our world here, so I guess it's not as scary as in a commercial situation where you start work before the sun comes.
Well, you could precipitate a serious problem. Somebody could start work, you could disagree if that should have been done. There's no contract in place, and therefore you could not pay that person, and that person could sue you. It's something that has to be addressed.
I agree. I totally agree.
I will say, though, with our contract, they were very diligent.
But you wouldn't start work without it.
That's true, too. That's true, too. Sorry, John, just a little joke.
Can I ask another question on that?
Sure. Yeah.
What types of projects are we talking about? Are we talking about a project, I would imagine, that needed a quick start for completion purposes or something, or an emergency?
Well, most of the time, it would be like a emergency contract, or it might be a professional service we're working on. And an example would be like our build program. We did a short-term contract and to extend it while we're doing the competition going forward. And it took us a little bit longer to implement that contract than by the we couldn't necessarily send the whole building program during that process while we negotiated the final words of the contract.
Do you plan to have rapid contracting procedures under urgent conditions where the exposure is limited in time and money, but so you can get something started without all the required formal documentation, but sufficient to not cause you to have a problem because you start without any contractual instrument? Do you have such procedures in place, and do you plan to put them in place?
We don't have anything in place like that.
Okay, well, I'd like to suggest a consideration that you do that. Enterprises do that all the time. Even the federal government does that. If there are urgent situations, there are different rules, okay, that apply. So rather than be in a position of having someone work without authorization, it may be better to consider, I think this is a friendly suggestion, developing an urgent, rapid, time and dollar limited procedure to avoid being in that position.
Another question. Is there like a leading, lagging situation here, Tom, that for some of the contractors, kind of when they know it's kind of going, they need to start getting some horses rolling before they actually start some work? Is there like a leading situation where they don't want to lose time?
There are situations like that, and we try to limit that as much as possible. You know, we've eliminated a lot of that type of stuff, you know, trying to anticipate when things go forward. You know, sometimes it just takes a little while for the legal departments to work the contract out, you know, and that's, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to throw the legal under the bus. I got that look.
You didn't get the foot stomp.
So. Yeah. But sometimes it takes a while for their legal department to understand that we are an entity and we have our ways of doing things and, you know, trying to work those contracts.
I think Elliot's suggestion is a good one. At least it forces us to say there's a reason why we're starting this without a contract, as opposed to, well, sometimes we do, sometimes we don't.
This has to be a contract. It's just a special emergency start.
Essentially says this is an unusual situation, and here's what we have to have signed to do that, but it will go into a contract. I think that's a good idea. If federal government does it, it can't be wrong.
Quick question. First meeting. I hope this isn't too naive. I'm missing something here. What do we do to deal with either perceived or in fact conflicts of interest? Especially my concern has been whenever there are quick starts, it's a good reason not to follow procedure. Who determines what is a quick start? It seems to me that we have to err on the part of due diligence and discretion, especially with, you know, reestablishing our credibility with the community. Not to, you know, there are areas where we have great credibility. But we're all, you know, am I missing something here? It seems to me that should be a high priority.
I can tell you what I know of it, and then I'm going to ask Tom. I know that questionnaires are circulated for conflict of interest, and your contractors complete them. In our audit of the financial statements, or the bond expenditure audit, I don't recall which this year, that comment was made. Well, yes, those are circulated. They actually need to be reviewed critically to see if there is anything. So I'm going to now let Tom say what we've done since that time. Because remember, again, as you mentioned, this is from a year ago.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, so we've really increased the checking on the conflicts of interest with people who work on our program. You know, and we've gone through extensive process. Legal's reviewed it, and the Inspector General's reviewed it, and we've gone through and had the board review the process. So we really, really beefed that up this last year to get around that. And we're also, you know, you're at Mission College, right?
Yes.
We're also trying some pilots there. Hopefully, if they work well, then we might roll that out to the rest of the campus.
Right, but you see an element of Robert's comment that we said, and I think it's right, that even in emergency procedures, there are certain minimal things that have to be done, and that's one of them.
That was one of the perceptions at Mission, that there were quick decisions that needed to be made, and I just, as long as we're feeling that we're adhering to an industry standard, then that's been great.
We really increased that the last year.
Appreciate it.
And that's something we're certainly going to look at in one of the audits that we do. Usually the other one got issued first.
At the end of this month, when you start the next audit, hopefully your report will be different. That's a something.
Thank you.
They've been working extremely hard this year trying to clean up, that's not the right word, trying to be more diligent about procedures and policies and ways of doing things. This is why I keep asking questions. You know, was that now changed since they did their audit? And that's, if you need to know that. Thank you.
I appreciate the orientation.
And if I can give you a specific example, the chancellor issued a directive with a special conflicts of interest checklist that was developed by the Inspector General that was designed to address not just statutory issues, but also sort of more appearance of impropriety issues and that sort of stuff, and directed that it be used in processes.
Excellent.
I'm just kind of wondering whose job it is within the district to make sure that we're all crossing our T's and dotting our I's. Is it the OIG, or is it the legal department, or is it the chancellor's office, or is it the program managers themselves and who oversees them? Like, I know that we had that diagram a long time ago, but I roughly remember that everyone ultimately has to answer to the chancellor's office, but who's really there to make sure that all of the documentation?
If we're talking about the audit, the staff is required to provide periodic updates to the board regarding the work they have done in response to findings like these. There's a regular schedule for that. An accounting, if you will, is provided. And, of course, that work is kept honest by the fact that when the auditors come back the following year, they comment on the status of those audit findings. So I think that the accountability feature is a good one. And I think in terms of the temporal side of this, this is really a snapshot in time, and it's an area of seeing how that relates to where we were and where we're headed. Thus, Tom's earlier comments, assertions really, that indeed some of these issues have already been addressed, and that will be documented in the next round of auditing. So it's a little bit of on faith, but not too much. What is that?
We can make it stronger than that by asking this question, I believe. In terms of your recommendations, was there any serious pushback or comment from those to whom you provided this report that no, they don't want to do this? Or
actually, no. Okay. I felt that they were very receptive
to the president,
to our comments. I would also like to say, who is responsible? The district. The district received $6 billion in bond funds. They can ask people, subcontractors, anybody they want to help them. They can hold them accountable, but ultimately the district is responsible.
And that means the Board of Trustees.
So we had some other comments. They say low priority dollar amounts were small, didn't impact the actual construction projects. But important enough, we did test them, so I'm going to comment on them. The closeout process, when a project is complete, could be better as far as obtaining the right documentation, etc. Looking back, you want to make sure you have all your insurance documents and everything else in place for a closed project. I know that, from my understanding, they've adopted some new policies and procedures around that process. but we did find the documentation was inconsistently provided or just not available. And last, your subcontractors, if you will, have certain costs that they pass through to you that you must approve ahead of time. This isn't a big dollar amount, but still requires diligence because at some point it could, just because we only identified $12,000 related to charges that didn't receive pre-approval before we paid those bills and they were submitted to us for payment. So again, that was $12,000 out of $520 million. So I do want to keep all of that in perspective. When you look at the report also, $520 million. So it's easy to be alarmed at some of these comments. You didn't have support for this or that. $6 billion in expenditures over that you're managing and $520 million in a year. In any entity, in any type of organization, you're going to find a few things that need to be corrected. Not to say that these aren't important. They are. I don't want to downplay them.
Well, that's $12,000 out of two schools, is that correct?
Yes. We selected 54 invoices.
Right. So if you extrapolated that, it's still not much. But
mm-hmm. And two colleges.
We went to two colleges. Mm-hmm. And if you're interested, the projects that we looked at were the Cox Building upgrade and the Child Development Center at Southwest and the Science Complex and the New Learning Resource Center at Harvard.
So the funds involved in those three were $500 million?
No, all of the bond expenditures for them.
So the $12,000 comes about through examination of the things you just mentioned. What is the total dollar amount of what it is to examine?
You know what? That isn't a report. I don't have that off the top of my head.
On the order of magnitude.
What were the totals of those four projects that we audited?
Was it $10 million out of $500 million or something like that?
Oh, it was one.
Well, more than $10 million is sufficient. $12,000 is still a very small percentage. Right.
The science project in the Learning Center in Harper holds two.
Actually, I see these big books here. My guess is that those numbers are in here someplace. I just don't have that handy. I'm sorry.
Okay. One more question. How did you pick those two schools or those two projects?
We actually went through a very interesting process to do that, or methodical. I'm going to let Pam explain how we selected those and the projects.
Yes, so part of that process for picking the campuses was we took a look at, obviously, we're going to be doing the performance audit over the 3 years, so we wanted to get a sample of some projects that were active, some that were closed, some were different delivery methodologies, including design-by-build, how many change orders they had going through, how much total expenditures as part of, associated with the different invoices and things. We looked at a lot of different factors and just kind of judgmentally, ultimately at the end, we did a judgmental determination, taking in all these different factors, weighed in on this side of the campuses and then selected the project.
Well, I have a question. If each of the policies and procedures seem to be different in each of these campuses, as you discovered earlier, then how can picking two schools and looking at their operations relative to their policies and procedures extrapolate to the other schools who have different policies and procedures to actually make a conclusion?
We don't. We conclude on that. You know, it is a cost-benefit. I'd be happy to look at all projects at all campuses every year. That's not cost beneficial, so we do selection.
They sampled, and it doesn't seem that they sampled for judicial selection.
And we are going to do it for two more years. We've actually already selected the schools. I'm not sure about the projects. Have we selected the projects? We're still looking at the projects, but we have selected the samples. We'll be going to three colleges this coming year.
Do they know in advance, or you're looking at history anyway?
We're looking at history.
The year's almost over, so
right. So there's not much they can do at this point.
I understand.
Yes. What schools are those?
Yes, tell me the schools.
Right here them. On the form. They're LA, Southwest College. Oh, the next
those
one.
Were last year.
So
I'm
this
sorry.
Year it's going to be City, East, and Tri-Tech. And then the projects are
those are the three coming up.
Which are the schools?
City, East,
and Tri-Tech.
Yeah, East, and Tri-Tech. And again, we haven't selected. We started this week for the coming year. So
I might interject here. So you can almost bet the schools that aren't getting audited the first year and the second year will probably be the third year.
Do the math, yes.
Yeah. Well, do they see the results or do they have something to trade out in the future? Or do they get the results so they're a little bit concerned about keeping their stuff straightened out for the future? The schools you haven't done, are they aware of the things you're finding?
I believe that they've all been provided with the report, yes. The presidents have all received that report.
So hopefully that puts an attention that, hey, this we found it here, so you're going to get your stuff together?
I want to make sure before I say this, did they see that before we actually finalized the report? The campuses actually saw the report before we finalized it, yes. So we, and again, we didn't get a lot of, if any, that I can recall, pushback or concern. I think that, you know, people in this room, as we talk, and the people at the campuses agree, these are pretty reasonable expectations to have of a program, and they're good suggestions. So nobody argued the point at all.
No, I think these are things that have been identified by this committee in the last while, and by the board that needed to be typed up, as did the group themselves.
Now, it's also a function of what we look at, what's in our scope. So the scope was to provide it to us in the request for proposal. We reiterated that. The district agreed. So if that scope, committee wants to expand that scope and change that scope, the management right now is ready to throw something at me. But if there is something in particular that is of concern, then we can include that in our performance audit. That hasn't come up in the past, but it's possible.
Well, thank you for I'm a believer in the efficiency of sampling. There's no question about that. There's extrapolation of the problem is I don't see where it fits here because I'm not sure it's extrapolable. And I think we're talking billions of dollars.
Over 3 years, we're going to cover all the food.
I know.
Yeah, and I will point out that, and I don't know the timeline, somebody will correct me, I'm sure. We used to have a much more centralized approach to the construction and the management of these programs, and there was a big bottleneck. So some time ago, it was decided that we were going to decentralize, and a lot of decisions were made at the campus level. And that is about the time where things became a little bit inconsistent. So I think something in the middle of those two might be appropriate. But to your point, right, that would be difficult if they don't have the same policies and procedures and people to say that that applies to another campus.
And now there's a transition. The other towards decentralization. So this whiplashing has really got me concerned.
Did you find a significant difference in your findings from one campus to another?
There were some consistencies and things that were common amongst them. There's also some very different areas based on our testing. And some of it is comes down to maybe like the form they use or a slight tweak to the process or something. But for overall, I mean, they followed a generally standard approach, but then kind of supplemented.
But in terms of the problems you found, they were sort of consistent across both campuses?
Some had same consistent findings and others or observations.
What I'm trying to get at is,
just to that campus.
In terms of sampling, whether or not, you know, if you found two campuses that were just wildly different in the problems they had, that might indicate that all the campuses might have wildly different problems. But if two campuses were relatively the same, one might be able to theorize that the more campuses we do, you'd keep finding the same problems just more times over.
There was a trend.
Yeah, we suspect that we will see these same comments. We might find new ones. We don't know what we will find at the next ones. But depending on what's happened in the last year, if all things equal, nothing changed, I would expect to see similar comments because of the decentralization.
Hopefully there's been some changes. David, I'm picking on you. You sat on this committee and then took a leave because you can't continue. Are you hearing anything significantly different than when you were on the committee before?
I'm not sure my memory is good enough to answer that question.
Okay, I won't pick on you.
I will say this, that each time when these performance audits came before the committee in the earlier time that I served, that Nancy's referring to, I attempted to make sure we asked probative questions like many of you are asking, and we consistently got a good response in the sense of the firm said that management agreed with recommendations and was committed to implementing those. I worry that I took too much confidence at those answers because then sometimes we would get similar things come up subsequent years. So I think the most important thing is it seems like management is agreeing with these, and I think we need some evidence over the course of this next year that they're being fully implemented. And maybe ultimately we won't know that until we get the next performance audit. But
I have one last question about the audit. And this is a sensitive question. the general problems you found and the inconsistencies in your suggestions, are they based on competence of management or inefficient procedures, or both?
I think, as I commented, sometimes processes are not just designed properly. Sometimes they're designed properly and they're not implemented properly. So I guess the answer is both. It could be both.
Is there a comment?
Richard?
When you do an audit, you're basing your studies and findings as a comparison to industry standards. How did this report compare to industry standards for, I don't know if you can narrow it down that far, for a major construction program such as this?
For a major construction program such as this, and it's very large, I would say that the leading practices for budgeting and for consistent policies weren't followed here. Those are leading practices in projects of this size. So I would say in those areas, you're probably lagging. Those are best practices, and that's why we would encourage you to adopt them.
And that then places an onus on the district to see to it that the information that has been provided as a result of this audit, which is the other schools, and having done that, we could expect, hopefully expect, to see a major difference in the next audit. And I think that's got to be a metric we observe. Data's there, it's being fed back. The next action point is inform people informed by this process, with the same auditing rigor. And we would hope to see a significant improvement, given that you've now clarified that, in my mind, there are some major issues that were not followed. Thank you. Camille's up next.
Thank you. Before we get off of this subject, I know it wasn't listed as an action item, but could we make a motion that the district review the findings of the audit and implement those as quickly as possible to correct the deficiencies that have been noted?
So there's a motion. Anybody second that?
Can we just say, though, to the extent that they're not, to the extent that they're not otherwise already implemented?
Well,
because the district has already said to us that they've implemented many of these, and I don't want to.
Sure.
I don't want a motion that presumes that's not
true. Accept the amendment.
So gladly. You rephrase that. Then okay, you'll accept that amendment. Any further discussion? Vote, please. All four.
Aye.
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 All abstaining. All against. Passes. Would you write that out? Both, do you have that?
No, it's completely consistent with the consideration of the performance audit. That's fine.
The question I was asking Camille is that we want to be sure that we're keeping in the wrong and whatnot.
So the Brown Act requires that the scope of what you're discussing is appropriately placed before the public, so the public has an opportunity to know. Since the performance audit was clearly posted, anything that relates to your, you know, assumptions about the performance audit or your response to the performance audit would be a reasonable motion for you to undertake. We provided in your packet a list of lawsuits regarding the building program. I did note that we inadvertently left one off, which is a more recent arrival. As you might imagine, the vast majority of the cases are about actual construction and about what we call stop notice cases. And for let me just mention briefly the one that's not here. There's a case called Fujin versus LA Community College District and the Known Universe. I'm kidding about the last part, sorry. It's going to be funny. The case is a federal court action brought by an unsuccessful bidder for the Inspector General Services, who's contending and that it's been denied. It was denied award on the basis that the firm is owned by an African American owned firm. I don't have any reason to believe there's any merit to the action at all. But it is a bond-related action that's being defended by the district, and they've named a lot of people individually as well as the district. As you can see from the memo Fujin, F-U-G-E-N, is the name of the organization, and they brought it in federal court. We've assigned the law firm of Liebert Cassidy Whitmore to handle that. They do a lot of our, successfully, a lot of federal court actions for us. Most of the cases in the list are stop notice cases. Those are cases where someone's made a claim that they provided materials or work or something like that to the general contractor and haven't been paid by the general contractor. And keeping with Mr. Schwartz's reference to the lien process, in a public agency, you can't put a lien on our property. So they file a stop notice. We set the money aside by statutory mandate. And 99.9% of the cases are settled and settled rather quickly. So you can see there's a high volume of them that come in and then go back out. In addition to that, and cases that have been a point of concern with this committee before involved the four cases brought by the Vandekamp Coalition. There were four actions filed. The district prevailed on 3.75 of the four, and lost the one last point of it. That part that was lost has now been appealed, and so the matter is still pending in the Court of Appeal. So that is the status of all of those cases. In addition to that, there's some pretty significant litigation in multiple forums involving FTR International. And Mr. Schwartz, are you still doing business with them?
No.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Excuse me, but I was going to suggest that you needed to step out of the room.
For staggeringly obvious reasons.
Due diligence, counsel. Well done.
FTR sued the district seeking a reversal of the debarment that the board had determined. The board had determined to debar FTR International on three bases, that it had filed a false form involving the Division of State Architect, that it had filed a claim for payment of $1 million that it had not earned the work for at the time, even though it had been credited back a year later, and that there was significant flaws in construction on the Allied Health Building at Valley College.
Oh boy.
The board had a subcommittee that heard all of the evidence, made a recommendation to the full board. The full board sustained the finding of a debarment. FTR challenged that in the Superior Court, and the Superior Court judge concluded that the evidence was insufficient to substantiate that. That matter is, it's a very complicated litigation process. There are a lot of cases going on. Meanwhile, FTR also has litigation against it by other agencies involving their projects and by its insurance companies. And several of its creditors have filed a petition seeking its involuntary bankruptcy, the involuntary bankruptcy of FTR, which FTR is opposing. So, as you might imagine, there are cases going on all over the place. Yes, it's very... It's a fascinating exercise in civil procedure if you want to go to law school. And just to give you an example of the nuances of these things, typically when you have a bankruptcy case, it has the effect of automatically putting a hold on all litigation involving that credit, that debtor, because there are all kinds of rights and remedies being at play. But a Superior Court judge has concluded that the issue of the debarment is not part of the bankruptcy estate, and therefore it will go forward, where by comparison the cases on the bankruptcy are all put on hold. So the district's case against FTR regarding the Valley LA Health Building has been put on hold by operation of all of these things. And more to come, I assure you we will have, there are developments all the time on this particular matter, and we will see things unfold as they go.
One question, if I may.
Yeah.
First.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
The question of stop order, and you put aside
stop
money.
Notice? Yeah.
What do you call it?
Stop notice.
Stop notice. Okay.
Yeah.
And you put aside money in the event that the other party prevails.
We're mandated to.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, the question is, how much money do you know how to put aside? And the reason why I say that is I'm questioning whether or not personal damages can come up as a result of what you've done. That is to say, someone claiming that you damaged a small company by having such a thing. And if so, then how do you estimate how much money?
So what happens is, let me say it's an electrical subcontractor. The electrical subcontractor says, we did $125,000 right. worth of work, and therefore they file with us a stop notice for $125,000. We actually withhold 150% of that in order to cover our attorney's fees in dealing with it. And then what usually happens is the general contractor's lawyer and the subcontractor's lawyers make a deal, we get dismissed, and
it works.
And we pay whoever they tell us to pay.
And you never got stuck with a much larger bill as a result. Right. Rarely.
Right.
No. Sorry, there were two other questions there. Yeah. Next, I think.
With regard to FDR, in terms of construction that they were responsible for, where are we on those projects? Is this all happening after the fact, projects that were closed out, or are there projects that were underway that we've now kicked them out of? And
I think I can answer that question, but I may have to, Mr. Hall may have to help
me
in some way.
But
let me try to give you the highlights version if I can.
Okay.
FDR was implicated in five different campuses. It was the low bidder on a project for East LA College that had not started. And so part of the finding by the board was to find them not responsible as a contractor, which has been part of this litigation. I believe that project's on the moratorium. I think so. The Mass Science Building?
Actually, we rejected all bids on that.
Oh, yes. Sorry. So,
essentially, that project doesn't, for FDR purposes, that project doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
So we have four more.
Right. I said five campuses.
Five campuses. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
It does get more complicated. And at Pierce College, there were two projects. And in that case, we have a major pile of stop notices from all of the subcontractors and material suppliers and stuff for Pierce College. And so those, and also an interest by its insurance company, its surety, as well as an interest by its bank lender in what's there and what the assets are and that sort of stuff. So those are in play as well. Both of those projects were mostly done, but one of the things that we're looking at very closely now is whether the work was done appropriately by either FDR or its subcontractors in making assessments about it. And because
the work stopped?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then all work in FDR is no longer working on any campus.
Okay.
Okay. There was a project at Mission that where there's still some pending disputes about the final pay on that. And there was another project, Mission, a design build project at Mission, where the board elected to terminate for convenience after the debarment. And the architect on that, it was a design build project, and the architect on that design build project is alleging that FDR was paid for the design fees, but the architect never got paid. There was a design build project at West, which the board also terminated for convenience after the debarment, and the architect there is making a similar contention.
Same architect?
No, different architect. Have I hit everything? Mostly?
Does
West separately hire the architect, or is it the responsibility of the contractor to hire the architect?
They were hired in a design build competition, okay. So they were hired together. And you may recall that the Inspector General did a report regarding those procurement processes. Mm-hmm. And
they submit as a team.
That's right.
So we have some buildings.
But so the obligation is that to pay the architect belongs to the district. Because the architect is not a subcontractor
They are.
Okay, yeah. That's what I was looking
yeah.
for.
They
So it's not an obligation on the
They have filed a stop notice.
Yes.
But they are also among the creditors seeking involuntary bankruptcy.
Okay, so bankruptcy is what makes this more difficult.
Well, everything makes this more difficult. it's a complicated situation. You've got different kinds of contracts in different stages of activity at different campuses, and a lot of different subcontractors and vendors who have different
interests.
But in the
world in which I travel, okay, contractors are responsible for the payment of subcontractors. I'm the funder of the contractor.
Right.
So unless there's something unusual here, that's not an obligation on the district.
Well, construction...
It's our obligation to have the money withheld. And so we have We have money that was under contract with FTR prior to the terminations and that sort of stuff that's now being held and is in dispute.
There was another question.
Well,
sorry, I didn't
recognize
you.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, being new to the committee, I was somewhat appalled at the number of suits that I see in here, ranging in price from $1,000 to $15 million.
That's very common in the construction industry. It is really, honestly, the way business is done.
What does it cost? What kind of legal cost does the district have for this? Because if there are legal costs, that means as taxpayers, we're paying for the legal costs on these things, aren't we?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. The costs of the legal costs for the building program were generally budgeted for legal and audit together at 1-3% for each one of the building programs. And the legal costs by themselves across the three projects together, I couldn't break them down for you separately. But as of last June, we had spent less than 1% of all expenditures on legal fees and settlements.
What amount does this come down to?
It was about $12
million. $12 million on legal fees?
Not just on legal fees. Because it was also, that includes some contractual settlements, that also includes some claims consultants, it includes arbitrator fees, and that kind of stuff. But it's $12 million out of about $3
billion. Well, as Elliot says, the contractor is responsible. Why do we have all these suits against us?
The courts are determining if, in fact, that's the case. Yeah. Oh, no, this is past history. I'm sorry. And this may involve other issues than contract or subcontract. You should answer the question.
Yeah. Well, so the stop notice cases are where there's typically where there's a dispute between the
what she's asking about is the legal fees.
Legal
fees, the 1% that you referred
less
to.
Less than 1%.
Less than 1%. The $12 million.
$12 million right. You're talking about.
So why don't you rephrase your question so she
maybe I'm
can
sorry.
Answer.
Maybe I should
what
listen
I'm
more carefully.
What I'm asking is what is this costing us, and what are we doing about these tremendous costs? The district has financial problems, and we're putting aside $12 million to cover these suits.
It was absolutely expected from the inception of the first bond measure that there would be significant legal expenditures because the construction industry is a very litigious industry.
Sure is.
And yes, it is. And those stop notice cases are not unusual. They're unusual when you end up with 24 of them in one contractor. They're unusual when you end up with millions on one contract that are stop noticed. But just to give you an example, we had one contract where the project was virtually done. We had about $260,000 in stop notices in money left. After we anticipated money for our legal fees, there were claims in excess of that, and so they had about we took the $170,000 and that was left, and we gave it to the court and said, you tell us who to pay, because that's the way that, because we knew the money was owed to somebody, but because we contract with the contractor had gone belly up, the contractor's insurance company had gone belly up, and so we were down to subcontractors, small businesses mostly, that hadn't gotten paid, and we knew that we owed the money, but the question of to whom the money had to be paid had to be determined by the court.
Jaden had the next question.
Yeah.
I just need clarification on the stop notice projects. Are those projects still unfinished and they cannot be rebid because they're still in executory contract terms? Or since the debarment, are those projects now open for rebid?
Will they be reinstituted?
Are you talking about the FTR project?
Yes. Sorry.
Okay. So the answer is it depends on the project.
Okay.
Because there may be some construction that has to be remediated, or they may be completely done, and it's a question of resolving the stop notices.
Okay.
They may or may not be reopened for reasons of policy reasons related to the moratorium, as opposed to other kinds of reasons.
Yeah. Okay.
But for projects that are not finished, or it's just a matter of legal battle, or we have physical construction that isn't finished, there are issues of quality and what's there, how are we finishing those projects? Are they just stopped now until all this is resolved, or do we have a, in effect, remedial program for the FTR work to get it finished correctly and usable?
The answer is largely the latter. What we have to do, though, is we have to take a snapshot, for lack of better description, to make an assessment in order to preserve evidence and for claims that may be made against FTR later or may involve disputes of a subsequent contractor, and then the rest of it will be handled with appropriate contracting methodologies, which, of course, is in the hands of Jim and Tom and friends.
Okay.
Good update. What I would like to see, however, is that when on the pending stop notice cases, if we had a date when they were originally, the stop notice was originally filed, it would help to understand the process. And for those resolved stop notices, the actual opening date or the date the stop notice was filed and the date it was completed.
Or anticipated in the case of those that are open.
I don't know if you can come up with an anticipated, because you're with the courts then.
Yes.
But if you could include those on this, dates and the any other dates that would be applicable to, or that you had information on.
Okay.
Like the resolved, other resolved and pending pension fund cases and what have you as well.
Yeah.
I would like to say, however, this is a major leap forward for me personally on this committee, having this in my hand.
Okay.
It's wonderful information. You know, from all of those meetings we had with the Vandekamp people here, I had this feeling that we were under a tsunami of litigation and the world was coming to an end, and this is, in my mind, a pretty normal kind of thing for this much concern.
I'd like to agree with you and compliment you for preparing it, and I think it is an example of something we're doing that's good in terms of discharging our obligations, which is to try and get as knowledgeable a position on construction as we can.
We had provided you a
list. I'm sorry, was there somebody I didn't recognize?
Thank you. We had provided you a list before in response to your request, and so we'll build it in as part of our more systematic activity. We may not provide it for each one of your meetings, but at least every other meeting. I will try to make sure we get it to every meeting, but sometimes...
It doesn't typically move that fast.
Right,
One Vandekamp question. To the extent if we lose the appeal, will we just terminate the lease for the school, or will we do a supplemental EIR, or has that not been decided?
That hasn't been decided by the Board of Trustees yet. The Board has given the staff direction to...
I'll be speaking to that in my report.
Oh, excuse me.
Okay. I'll wait.
So I was just going to say again the same. I mean, thank you, Camille. To me, it is very helpful. You have to have quite a constitution for this kind of work. You obviously have it, but I mean for the rest of us. Cause
to say nothing of recall.
It does have a natural unnerving effect when you see stuff like this. But I do find also, I've seen enough of these to feel comfortable that when you have 3,000, 8,000, that's like standard stuff, and you always got a few zingers, and so we get it. And you're managing it, and it's nice to see it. Were you going to talk a little bit about Murillo, or what? Because that's the only other one that jumps out.
So Murillo,
what page is that?
Murillo Construction. I think it's the
page
last,
9. Yeah. Inside the last.
Somewhere
page.
After the sea of stop notice.
Page 17.
Yes.
Construction Kings. Okay.
Murillo Construction had a project at East LA College and a project at Trade Tech College. The project at Trade Tech College was the Child Development Center, and over the course of time, a dispute arose. Murillo had made a demand of just over $2 million for additional compensation. The district agreed that some additional compensation was due, but not $2 million. And since we were unable to reach resolution, we went to arbitration. The arbitrator awarded $1 million, the Board of Trustees is directed to file a petition to vacate some of that arbitration award, not all of it. Meanwhile, while that litigation was going on, there was a significant water penetration issue that was discovered on that building. And so we asked Murillo Construction to consolidate our water intrusion claim against Murillo which they declined. So we also have a complaint filed against Murillo for about $1.5 million. Does that sound right? About $1.5 million on that same building. So we have quite a bit of litigation going on that front. In addition to that, Murillo Construction had a project for the E1G1 Plaza, entry plaza at East LA College. In that particular case, they were both cases they were terminated for convenience. In at East LA College, the district contended that they owed about $7 million or so in work that we had to have redone. Murillo counterclaimed, alleging that the district owed Murillo $13 million. So it was a $20 million swing, and I am waiting with bated breath for a decision from an arbitrator on that matter.
So it went to arbitration.
Any further questions? Yes.
This makes me really excited about law. I love law. I really appreciate this. As a future law student, I want to look into this and help study if you need an intern, by the way.
Somehow I'm not sure that
there might be a conflict there, too.
Yeah,
well, once I'm off the committee.
Okay.
I do have to say, last time, I forget his name. He's in
Kevin Jetter
from
my office.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was here in my place.
He said that a lot of these cases of litigation will go in for a couple of years. Is that a correct estimate?
The big ones do.
Okay.
So Vandy Camp has been a multi-year litigation matter. Morello is a multi-year litigation matter. FTR is certainly going to be a multi-year litigation matter. When the board voted to debar FEI, FEI challenged it in the Superior Court and then appealed it to Appellate Court and even tried to appeal to the California Supreme Court. And the district prevailed in all cases, but obviously that took a number of years and a lot of lawyer time to deal with. So
I wonder we have
the stop notice cases actually come and go pretty fast. But these other ones that are involving construction defect contentions are the ones that tend to go on for quite a while. They're very detailed. They take a long time. It's complicated to decide who did what, where, and who's responsible for that.
Yes.
I know that the district has submitted some contractors to the state for debarment over issues that have arisen. Are any of these on the list? Especially in the case of submitting a request for payment where there was false documentation provided, is the district put any of these contractors on the list forward for debarment?
No, typically those cases involve a dismissal where we are not privy to what was decided about what was owed or not owed. The Board of Trustees took 3 debarment actions. The first one was on H&M Electrical, which was doing high voltage work they shouldn't do at Harbor College and blacked out Harbor College and almost killed somebody. The board debarred them. They didn't challenge that. FEI was paying people under the table and not paying them prevailing wage and other kinds of bad things about how they deal with employees. The board debarred them. I've explained the litigation series to you. And then the third debarment was FDR, which, as you know, is in litigation.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Riveting.
Thank you very much.
All yours.
Thank you very much.
Good to see you.
Nancy, how are you doing? How was your trip?
Well, I don't want to come home.
Good. And you're healthy.
I'm sitting here reflecting on the last hour, and I think I've got to pull some of the staff aside. And Thursday to position me more positively. Here I am following an audit report and a legal report. Talk about being up against the wall. I think the one who, maybe I can use some humor further in terms of maybe saying a little bit more about the audit if I may.
Sure.
Presentation and discussion today, I think, is a good example of how we see the world differently. I have this lovely story of two children, an older brother and a younger sister, on an elevator. with ice cream cones. You've all been on elevators. People come in, come out. Well, one woman got on with a fur coat in there with those two children with ice cream cones. And as luck would have it, the population of the elevator grew and grew until finally the fur coat and the ice cream cone of the younger sister collided. And the older brother, quick to comment, said, "Oh, sis, look what you've done. You got fur all over your ice cream." And it's a great lesson, not only out of the mouth of babes, but of how we can see the world so differently. And I think it's important to know that there are multiple choices on what you saw with the audit. You would expect me to say what I'm going to say next, but it's very important to put that audit report in a temporal context. It occurred during a time when the Board of Trustees initiatives on reform were just getting moving. We were in, I think it was, someone used the word tsunami. I've used that word tsunami in regard to audits, because we've had audits left and right, as you know, in the last 18 months. And what you heard, as Tom noted, really are a number of deficiencies that largely have been acted on. So I would encourage you to adopt that old maxim about trust but verify, because that's really what our board has adopted. I said while the auditors were here, and I did appreciate Tracy's comments about the cooperative response of the staff. You can bet that's an interest of mine, and I think that permeates our response to auditors in a very specific way. But it's very important to note that the work that the board has done, indeed the way you have reinvented yourselves in the last year plus, is a very important accomplishment that should be celebrated. So we can very easily move toward Richard's suggestion about the trust and verify, show me the money. Because when we provide our periodic reports to the Board of Trustees on how we have dealt with these findings, or the findings of other audits, we of course can share them with you. So you can depend on that. Okay.
And I think you'd agree that we did do the verify bit by the motion was passed, saying that we anticipate that the lessons learned will be reflected in the next audit. Mm-hmm. We expect they will, and we'll look at that next audit with that in mind.
My job is to talk to you about, if you look at item six, think of those items as two things I'd like to talk to you about. One has to do with the overall work of the ad hoc committee, and for those of you who may be new or who may have forgotten, let me explain first that the Board of Trustees formed an ad hoc committee at the conclusion of the work of the Building Program Review Panel, which was an independent citizens group comprised largely of technical experts in construction, which met for the better part of a year and issued a report with, depending how you count them, 16, 18 recommendations, maybe a third of which were policy recommendations. And the committee has pretty much concluded its work. There's one central piece missing. It was alluded to today. That's why if you saw me smiling about the use of centralized and decentralized in the same sentence, I'm smiling because the ad hoc committee's final work is to review a very strong building program review panel report finding that the current nature of the construction program is too decentralized. So when they conclude their work, as they will shortly, it will make responses to that report. It will consider some options that staff will be serving up to address those findings. It's largely then the ad hoc committee been concerned with the work of the report. And we've given you periodic reports on those so you know where those stand. But recently, the board president, Miguel Santiago, recast the committee to do some other things. And that's what I want to talk about with you if I might now. And these documents may be of help to you. Might be a little bit short there, but thanks. In the spirit of I hope it's still a fresh term, continuous improvement. I want to talk to you about three areas that the board has considered to be important. Are there sufficient copies? I got one extra here.
Was there one?
It's a three pager. You should have each person should have a three pager.
I think these are in our package too.
Okay. Now, it's like third grade. Don't look ahead. Don't look ahead. Stay with me.
I have to focus on anything that says Vandy Camp.
Okay. Join me with the first item that speaks to a district operating fund to address deferred maintenance, et cetera. And this grew out of some heavy-duty discussions between the three members of the committee, one of whom, Mona Field, is to my left. She's joined on that committee by Miguel Santiago and Steve Veros. They comprise the ad hoc committee. As you see here, the committee, after much deliberation with staff and review of a number of materials, decided that it was time that, despite the difficult fiscal climate, that the district recognize what had been an ongoing need. And this described for you in probably best terms the second and third whereas. Referring to the various maintenance needs and upgrades of the massive physical capacity of our structures in nine colleges. It recognized as well, and any number of the 72 community college districts in the state could lament this fact, that there has not been support from the state for this category. So you got two pieces of the so-called perfect storm. You got lots of spaces that are being neglected in terms of maintenance and other kinds of improvements. And you've got a state looking the other way on providing.
Is this not a legitimate use of bond funds?
No. Excuse me?
This is not a legitimate use of bond funds, is that what you're saying?
No, this is an unrestricted general fund within the operating fund.
This is a forever thing.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
This is maintenance.
So if you look at those second and third whereas statements, you can see that the board looked at what had been these two ongoing needs. And what it decided to do was to start small. If you look to the bottom of the page, third resolve up from the bottom, shows you that beginning with the FY13 budget, it will set aside 0.5% of the unrestricted general fund. And that further, that amount would be increased over time as the fiscal climate allows to a level of 2%. I can tell you that even as we, in the next 6 weeks, move toward what will be a tentative budget presented to the board next week and a final budget presented in August, $2.3 million is no small potatoes. You have to trust me that there is enormous competition for dollars as we move to close a $33 million operating budget over the next 6 weeks. So, some, frankly, will see this as a nice to have. Why can't we put that money into XYZ? But it's the first of several steps that I'll talk about with you now that I think the board has said with some courage is needed. If in fact we're going to be a school, as was mentioned by the auditors earlier, a school that exemplifies best practice. So hold that thought.
$2.3 million, is it to a 0.5% level?
Excuse me?
That represents the 0.5%?
That's correct.
Okay.
If you turn the page with me, you'll see a companion statement that, again, and this is now a fund not on the operating side, but on the bond side. This is a fund which may be, as with my comments about the KPMG audit, maybe deserves a little context. Retrospectively, you'll find in that second whereas statement that in the early days, there indeed was a bond reserve account. I learned this as I continue to be a student of the bond program. But as you also see, what money was set aside, about $140 million, was almost immediately needed to address college needs. So the district has been moving forward then without the luxury of that support. So prospectively, and this is in the third whereas. The board notes in this resolution that there's still quite a bit of work to be done, about half, $2.7 billion worth of work. And we know that based on our experience with the first part of the building program, we know that there will be claims and risks currently unknown or accounted for that we've got to be prepared to address. So the board is essentially saying, let's dig in. We should have maybe done it earlier. Certain conditions didn't permit that. Maybe Mona Field can give you more, more detail that predates me. But the board has set aside then $160 million of the remaining $2.7 billion to set up this account to deal with those expected claims, those expected issues that will follow. In addition, again, in the spirit of best practice, as you note in that, the fourth resolve up, it's directed us to make use of the services of a risk assessment firm that will basically speak to us on, okay, we're saying 160, which Tom and Jim is in the percent range of 6-7%. Tell us whether or not going forward, in the climate we're in, especially the litigious climate that Camille Goulet just talked to you about, whether or not that figure is sufficient. So I think the board now, with, again, a fair amount of work still to be done, is preparing itself both on that deferred maintenance side, though modestly now, but growing 2%, and also here, looking to ensure that we are ready, especially as we move toward closing out the program, to address these various risks.
Jayden, I think, has a question to address to you.
I really appreciate this conservative risk mitigation. I think it's a really awesome move, so thank you, board. I do have a couple of questions because I don't know what certain terms mean, so I'm seeking clarification. The DSA closeout, I'm not familiar with. I don't know what that is.
This is the State Architect's Office.
Okay.
You were talking about I's and T's earlier. It's a matter of being sure that the program follows through and meets the various obligations of state law with respect to building construction. I wanted to then have you know that this is going forward. Now, one of the things, this could be a teaching moment here, one of the things that results from this is that, of course, by building up a bond reserve account, that money is largely coming from the colleges. So the colleges now have to reorient themselves to their preferred construction lists, knowing that, those dollars may indeed at some point in smaller or large portion return to them. They now need to readapt their building priorities in light of their obligation here.
You're going to allocate them? This is a requirement to the individual colleges?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Is that part of the moratorium aspect as well?
No, I don't think so.
Well, it kind of depends on how the institutions reprioritize their building program elements.
When was this put to the board?
May 23rd.
So they have like $15 million less per campus if you did it?
Well, it's not it's not done evenly. It's done on a prorated basis.
Based on how much their original budget?
And we can provide you, we have that chart. Let's bring that in, Jim, next time to show the DCOC what those are.
That would be the average.
Mr. Janet, it isn't taken away unless necessary. For some reason, okay, as the construction winds down, okay, less of this money is required than is anticipated. Then that could revert to construction money. I know that's not likely the case,
right?
You wouldn't do this.
Well, I'm going to send you a combination update I just sent out to the district on the budget and on the status of the moratorium. I think you'll find it interesting to see the scale of releases that have occurred in the last 4 to 6 weeks. It'll also just give you, as a citizen living in California, a better sense of how your community college is suffering from this fiscal climate. So I'll make a point to get that out to you in the next day or two.
Another question over there, and then there's another question here, please.
Richard?
Thank you for the information on this. I think is really what the DCOC should be receiving and reviewing from the Board of Trustees on a regular basis, anything that they would make a decision on in reference to the bond program should be reviewed and a recommendation made from this committee to support that view or oppose it.
Well, this is after the fact that you're saying it should be done before the fact.
Right. It can be either way. Either way, this body should receive these. If the board wanted us as a sounding board before they made a decision, obviously a proposed resolution could be presented for our recommendation or review and recommendation. And as well, even if it is a situation where they've already adopted a proposal, this committee should still review it and either recommend to support that decision that was already made or not.
You have a recommendation.
To go on record.
Well, and I would, if I may, maybe not to upstage you here, but I think your comment reminds me of one you also made in our last agenda review meeting, in which you talked about the importance of things that are served up by the DCOC to the board to be commented upon by the board. Mm. And I know, Tom, you've gone through now and you've identified those various resolutions.
Yeah.
And we'll be facilitating that.
So this will be before the fact, is that what you're saying?
Well, these are things that the DCOC has reviewed, taken positions on, which I think your point, if I'm remembering it correctly,
yes, okay,
should be sent to the Board of Trustees for its consideration and comment.
Yeah, that's initiated by us.
It seems to me there's a time lag here, because the things that Richard was referring to, and correct me if I'm wrong, are things that were decided months ago.
Well, so we haven't had meetings since May, there's a reality of
it. Well, again, I think we are finding our rhythm in terms of communication, and I think this is a nice enrichment of the communication processes we've begun with the quarterly meetings between leadership of the DOCC, DCOC, with the board, agenda development, etc. But I hope I didn't steal your thunder on
this. This is a review committee.
Yep.
So obviously we can only make recommendations based on information or recommendations from the board.
Yep.
Or information from the district itself. But I did have a question about the percentages on resolution BT2,
okay.
The first one, on the set aside for 0.5% of the unrestricted general fund. The state has a minimum standard for maintenance. Is it 1 now, or 1% now, or is it still 2?
It
says in the next resolve, 2.
Well, I know it's an industry standard, but the state of California has some mandates for school districts for maintenance dollars, and it had gotten up to one point, actually up to 3% to be set aside by all state districts.
Isn't there a problem with that, in that they always have these emergency resolutions to not set aside in a given year because of budget problems, and it goes on and on and on.
Well, I mean, that's what's happened in the last few years.
I drive around and I look at the new construction that LAUSD has put in place, some of the buildings that are maybe 2 years into their life look terrible. I mean, serious maintenance issues, and I assume it's just not getting done.
Yeah. It's no secret this is a regular target. This type of fund when dollars are needed.
And if you do it once.
We're hoping we can resist that and grow it.
But the state still does have a state minimum requirement, correct?
Well, we do have a reserve from the district. This is just specifically deferred maintenance. Up until 2008, the state was funding community colleges for some of their deferred maintenance. And so there was a fund that they had that they would allocate. It was called the state maintenance money. So they did have a fund there, but community colleges haven't seen any of that money since 2008. So the reality is we have to put together a way of maintaining the buildings that we're building.
The other thing that has existed at the colleges, at the district historically, I'm told, and here again, it's not so much a state standard, but a district interest, has been the creation from the new revenues that are appropriated as the fiscal year begins, a 5% so-called contingency reserve. So in the current fiscal year, for example, FY12, that ends June 30, we've enjoyed about a $23 million contingency fund. And I suppose it's possible that funds from that fund could be used for deferred maintenance. I don't think we've had a practice of doing that. But the board has an interest in creating a discrete fund for that purpose. And hopefully...
If it were a legitimate use of that contingency fund, it could do so within the context of that contingency fund and not do it in the context
of... It could, because any depletion of that reserve fund requires board approval. It can't be done indiscriminately by me or by
president. Well, no, I'm not saying the board shouldn't approve it. I'm raising the question of whether or not we've got too many checks and balances here. If there are other funds which can legitimately be used for this purpose, and if they can be fenced by the board for that purpose, possibly don't need this.
Yeah, I think the way the board read that, Elliot, was that the vagaries of state government almost always require mid-year corrections. And so it's wise to keep that fund as intact as possible.
Okay, but if you do that with a view on a regular basis, perhaps annually, to see whether or not you have encumbered funds that could be used for other purposes and release them for those other purposes, then that would make sense. Yep. And in terms of the comments that we make back to the board, that's one comment that I think we should make, that make sure that they don't overly insure themselves and therefore preclude doing things that are proper and legal and beneficial with that architecture.
But part of it is that we're talking about general funds for some of this, and bond money is not general fund money.
Right.
So what's being said, well, and
we,
it also is the discussion of a certain percent of bond money fund is also being set aside. And these two funds can't be mixed.
Those two can't be, but the discussion we were having had to do with yet another reserve.
He's talking about making use of. You would have had a good time at the District Budget Committee meeting this week, Ellen, because there was not uniform support, I'll share with you, some institutional politics, some inside baseball about shared governance. There was not institutional district-wide support within the committee for the creation of yet another reserve fund. It'll be somewhere between 5 and 7.5% for creating a base for FY14, because the board, I think, wisely is saying if the bottom falls out in November and this tax initiative fails, we are going to be looking very hard at preparing ourselves for FY14.
Well, this is the maintenance isn't really a reserve. You're just going to budget each year first 0.5% and then working up over time to 2% of money that will be spent.
Likely so.
I mean, I can't imagine even $2.3 million
in this
not being
wildly
stretched across nine campuses.
Exactly. Yeah.
But a point of clarification, what Tom has said, that the state did provide funds for maintenance, but hasn't since 2008, is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay, so that if they, I know this is a miracle, if they were to come back and get it, this would be on top of whatever you would get from the state, correct?
Ostensibly, yes, but again, that's a board policy decision. I think that they tend to monitor that with us pretty carefully.
But what I'm saying is, if this is passed the way it is, it's in... That's the policy. That's what
correct.
We're doing. And if we got more, it would have to be changed if you wanted to negate this
possibly,
down the line.
Yes, this is approved board policy.
The state is so far behind that getting back up to that level.
No, I just wanted to understand what we were talking about.
I have a question.
You're the third. The BLU.
I thought it was second.
So I wanted to comment on the scheduled maintenance reserve coming out of the general fund budget. It is a weenie. I agree with the perception that it is not really a reserve and that there's an expectation that it could be spent. I can assure you that much less will be spent from a college budget on deferred maintenance than from a district-wide reserve of which we have been weaned as colleges. Just simply because the urgency of putting things in the hands of faculty to teach or making them available to students at the front line is much more demanding. Mm-hmm. Removing that a little bit more at the district level is not something I would enjoy as a college president trying to respond to those, but also as a sort of a a growing babe, if you will, appreciate that there's value to it down the line when my buildings don't fall on top of me. And by the way, some of our original buildings are now starting to do just that. Luckily, we've abandoned them because we've built new buildings. Thank you, everybody. But it does get that way. And so the continued growth of that amount from a half a percent is that idea of weaning us off of an increasing and mounting objective that is going to maintain buildings, which in a few years will start needing some attention.
I can see the interaction with legal fund too, if we defer maintenance. Your comment was next and yours was third. You will get to speak.
Every district has a deferred maintenance backlog, from what I understand.
That's right.
Just as an example, Los Angeles Unified, when they started their overall bond programs, had a $30 billion deferred maintenance backlog. After spending close to $27 billion, their deferred maintenance backlog is now $30 billion. They have not caught up. They have built new buildings, but the vast majority of the buildings are still older buildings that need ongoing maintenance. I wanted to ask the question, do we know what the deferred maintenance backlog with the Los Angeles Community College District is, or maybe?
We had an assessment about 3 years ago, but we'll have a current assessment this fall, or this winter in January. I think they're scheduled to do that, so we'll get a current look. But because we've done a lot of our building program, so we want to see how that really affects the number. You know, because some of the buildings have been taken offline that were so to get a realistic number, I probably will have that number, shortly after the first of the year, because it takes them a little bit to compile it. But we are taking that seriously, and then we can figure out how much of a backlog we really have, because in the last 3 years we've put up a lot of buildings, we've taken a lot of buildings out of service. So to give you a number right now, it wouldn't be accurate, based on the amount of construction that we've been doing.
Well, I'm assuming that the moratorium has got an impact factor on this as well, because if something is not going to be updated, constructed, or et cetera, then deferred maintenance on the existing buildings that are having classes in them is going to be required. So there is quite a balance between what's in moratorium and what we're going to maintain or put off maintaining. And this adds to the complexity of the formula.
Your comment?
Mine? Chancellor, in reviewing the minutes from the last meeting, which I unfortunately couldn't attend, and I did read those, look that there's a lot of discussion, and I was pretty impressed with what I read, about one, our current building program seems to be 200% greater than our anticipated needs in the future, which I think is a major foundational statistic that should stay in all of our minds. But also there were some sub-conversations concerning where to go forward in the construction process and whether some buildings should just be built, maybe finish building them, but just shutter them off. Don't finish them, don't TI them out. I'm implying TIs, they didn't say that. Which in some ways, to me, could mitigate the problems that we're talking about here if implemented correctly. How do you reconcile these two resolutions with what I read from the last meeting about the future needs of the community colleges over the next, I think they talked about 5 years. Mm-hmm. I think in the next 15 years we're going to see a flattening or lessening of the population from my research. How do we readjust our thinking in the long term?
Well, I think we're trying to be as dependent on data as we can. Just be sure you understand that we've got a couple of processes that proceed in parallel function. We had, for example, an early release, as you are aware. We are, I think, just about there in terms of identifying and releasing projects that would not add additional square footage demands. It would generate additional NEO costs. And we're now doing two things somewhat concurrently. We're doubling back to colleges to review with them the relationship between new square footage and their capacity in this budget to support new square footage. And lastly, Tom and Jim are working with colleges to identify projects where perhaps there isn't an A equals B relationship between use square footage money to pay, but rather that there are legitimate exceptions that might be made for programmatic purposes and other good reasons that maybe fall a little bit into a subjective arena rather than an objective data-driven arena, but which I think for the good of some colleges will be required. Our hope is that we will satisfy those critics, and we're talking about voices that came through our finance audit, through our state controller's audit, about do you have enough money to pay for these buildings you're building? Mm-hmm. That we can legitimately speak to data-driven documents that prove that you can't, with a few exceptions. So, you know, I think right now, you know, the biggest issue we're dealing with is the impatience of colleges to have, you know, what do I have to do? What's the favorite question, Jim? What do I have to do to get my program off the list?
Absolutely.
My project off the list. And I think without being imperial about it, we're taking the view at the district that we're not going to do those releases until we're confident we can defend the relationships I just talked about. And that's progressing, I think, as you'll see in this update I'll send you, better than most people understand.
But you see, I'd like to suggest construction and implementation of the current bond projects to fit what is an anticipated, really diminishing demand for space? Or do you see us still continuing to build all this space that will give us 200% capacity that we'll never use for probably 15, 20 years?
No, I don't think the board sees us going in that direction.
Bob, one thing you have to keep in mind, some of the colleges are basically tearing down and matching it with building. So they're not increasing by 200%. There's a very uneven amount of increases
in
square footage per campus.
They will be replacing bungalow spaces, so
we're losing time at the end of our schedule. I think the chancellor has other things to say. I know Jim has things to say, so
Let me send you the update that I just sent out to the district.
Richard had one too. I can't believe that has this resolution been adopted by the Board of Trustees already?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. I can't believe that the district adopted this resolution without having an estimate of what the deferred maintenance backlog is already. So appropriately, there would be accompanying documents that gave them an estimate of some kind. If you don't have a current estimate, what was the 3-year, the estimate of deferred maintenance for 3 years?
I have to go back to get that number, but I guarantee you it was way more than $2.3 million. You know, it was, you know, this is just the first bite at the apple, so to speak, because we haven't had a deferred maintenance fund set up specifically for taking care of those issues. You know, in 2008, we were relying on the state to fund those projects, and we'd submit projects. Well, you know, and everybody kept thinking that the state was going to give us the money, you know, and the economy was going to turn, and, you know, well, we can't wait any longer. You know, so this, you know, we'd actually recommended it, the industry standard, which is 2% of the operational budget. And the board felt like it needed to start with this at the 0.5% and then work its way up to that, because there are a lot of other budget pressures right now. You know, when the state is cutting us, you know, we don't know how much yet, but it's going to be dramatic this next year on top of all the other cuts that we've already had, you know, and this time to start something like that, you know, it's a start in the right direction, but, you know, it's not without people saying, you know, we shouldn't do it at all. But
you've raised questions about the competence of the process sufficient so that I think we should have a special advisory meeting before the next meeting and put together our comments and what we've been provided at this meeting and subsequently and give our advice. May I just say to the group here, some people are new, anybody can be a member of the special advisory committee, but its size is limited to less than half of the membership so that we can meet in private, and we don't vote on anything. We just submit recommendations for the board to consider as a whole. It's a way of getting business done when we don't have enough time in the meeting. So anybody, here's our leader, Richard, anybody who isn't on that committee, wants to be on that committee, please advise him. Richard, please call the meeting and we'll discuss this and other issues.
What I can do is also you might factor into that this third resolution, which I'll deal with very quickly.
Okay.
Which could also be a part of that discussion. The third element of the work of the ad hoc committee is before you. It's dated June 13th, 2012. Item DT3. In reverse order, you were to look at the paragraph at the bottom of the page, you would see the relevant history that led to this resolution. You'll see there that in 2009, the district entered into a 5-year lease for the charter school. Just recently, the LA Superior Court ordered the lease to be terminated, an effective date of June 30th. That led in turn to the decision of the board to seek some ideas from staff regarding how the space might be used. So listed there for you are four that were part of 10 ideas we had served up to the board in a previous meeting. The board president turned those 10 items over to the ad hoc committee that I referenced earlier, and that committee, in discussion with me and other staff, came up with these four possibilities and said essentially to us, staff, go forth, come back with more detailed possibilities on these four options. And we're in the process of doing that. Is Adriana? She's leading this study, and we expect to bring it to the board probably late August, early September.
I want to thank you for bringing this to our attention and bringing it to our attention so frankly and answering our questions to give us a good view of what's going on.
I'm sorry. Give me 30 seconds more on the city controller's audit. You'll recall that the board sought out a review by the city controller of the process that was employed in the recruitment of the inspector general. That audit is complete. We've submitted our management response to it, and we're expecting the final version to be on
any minute now.
Any minute, like maybe on my desk when I get back to the office.
Supreme Court's ruling on health reform.
I'll report on that more fully when it's complete. Thank you.
Okay, and for the next meeting, just in advance, there were some other things that we discussed with you as possibly discussing in this meeting. We don't have time for it, I think, because we have to do the next thing, but it had to do with the two recommendations that were made by the special committee to you that I asked you to address, and you said that, in fact, the board had reached some resolution on that. I asked you to let us know because we didn't know by other means. We can wait till next time.
Okay.
It's a done deal. Mona, I'm sorry.
And of course I would never interrupt the chancellor. And for those who are new, I'm Mona Field. I'm one of those seven people they keep talking about, the board. And I thank you all for being here and making time. I just wanted to add on the very complicated situation at Vandekamp's with the legal action, that among the possibilities as Dr. Barrera works to provide, you know, list of options and how to proceed and depending on court decisions, that there may also be a community meeting in for the community as a whole so that we hear from not only the Vandekamp's coalition, who many of you have met, but also from the families of students at the school and the students and sort of get a sense of the whole picture over at that particular site. So that may also occur this summer.
That's a good one. Okay, we have two comments.
I just wondered, you mentioned that there were 10 options originally discussed. What were some of the other, for the Vandekamp, what were some of the other possible options?
I have those. Want me to do this quickly? Let me just run through those. Sell the property. Shuttle the new education building.
Shutter.
Relocate commercial properties that are there. Use it as swing space while we're readjusting building campuses. Get another college in there other than City College. Make it a regional center for various programs. Relocate the high school operation. Move the building program there. Those are the other six.
your comment.
I wanted to make a motion that the committee adopt a resolution support for Board of Trustees Resolution Number 1 to adopt the policy for funding of the district bond program reserve to address the levels of risk and work remaining on the district building program as explained in the results of their resolution number BC1.
Is there a second?
Second.
Hold on a second.
Is this something we have to do?
This well, it's been moved. We can't dismiss it. It's been moved.
So I'm just saying it's just a nice guy thing. I mean,
I believe, again, we're going to have a special committee meeting to discuss these things in more detail. So a motion has been made, and we either support it or don't. And
well, on the motion and to the question that was asked, this making motions and recommendations to the Board of Trustees on their actions is what the purpose of this whole committee has been established for. It's not just to review information that's provided to us, but it's actually to make recommendations. And that the reason I'm making it is this is a recommendation of support for their proposed resolve.
Which one is it? I agree. Is it the second page?
I
think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Okay, then I'd like to have some discussion. I'm asking myself for permission. The basic point is I think this is much more complicated than we've had a chance to discuss or analyze. I'm glad that they're doing what they're doing. I don't know if it's the right thing to do. I would prefer my position that we discuss this in the special committee. I encourage those who want to join the committee to the extent we have room to do so and arrive at a more considered position. I'm glad they're doing this, but I'm not sure it's the right thing to do the way it's being done. Not that there shouldn't be a reserve, but how we've arrived at it and possible double coverage.
Are there any more comments?
I kind of concur with Elliot only because I'd like some concrete numbers as to the backlog of maintenance costs. That might give us a more accurate number if this is going to cover.
If I was going to say, that's fine if we have the advisory committee review it and bring it back at the next meeting. If the seconder of the motion will withdraw the second, I will withdraw my motion.
I'll withdraw it.
To be on, and but the,
put it on your agenda for the committee.
For the next committee meeting.
I'd like to make a suggestion, if I may, so this will probably help whatever you have in mind. We're never going to cover what we have to cover by 12. Would somebody suggest extending the meeting, I mean by 2, to 2:15?
You can vote. So on. Moved.
Second. Okay, and seconded?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so we have some more room. Thank you again. I'm sorry, you have a comment.
I'm actually going to make a motion to refer this to the committee to discuss this.
It's already on his agenda. We've already done that as a
chair. I think we need to do that.
The chair can ask them to consider that.
Again, thank you. This is a very, very good presentation and discussion.
So thanks.
This poor man
had a chance. Just a point of orientation, really. I'm trying to understand the parameters of the newbie.
Good luck. By the time you get off, you may understand. Right.
I understand that we're here to talk about construction.
Yes.
Situation, but it seems to me there are programmatic realities that impact construction.
To the extent that anything impacts construction, as you use the term, it's legitimate.
Okay, good.
Absolutely. Then that's our focus. That's the only thing we're empowered to talk about.
We can't talk about educational programs.
No. What I'd like to offer then is a ponderable that the implicit assumption that we've exhausted and or that we are doing an effective job of developing new populations for our schools needs to be reexamined. These are extraordinary times. It's what I've done for 43 years. There are populations out there that we are not addressing effectively. Veterans being one of them. This is not necessarily a subject that people like, but people returning from AB 109.
Will you join us at the special committee?
Absolutely.
Bring that up, fine. Because we have to deal with it. That's a very complicated consideration.
Again, and that's also
but it could increase population.
No, I understand. I understand.
I believe we have a meeting. Is there a meeting scheduled for myself and whatnot and the board?
member, the chair of the board.
That was deferred to your return, so
yeah, I know, and I returned. So that there, that meeting is coming up, so we'll try to keep in mind what we're talking about, but I haven't got a date for it.
You know, I confess, I don't know. We were given a date. I confess.
No, we don't have a date. The comment was we don't have a date, and I think she's right. Save us, please.
James, I feel sorry for you.
Why would that be?
Don't be.
He's got 15 minutes, I think.
And I can't stay until then. I've got an appointment.
Then I'll keep you up.
But I would like to ask anyone that would like to volunteer that isn't on the advisory committee, would you yell out your name?
And if we have more names, I'll try to draw from a hand.
Right.
James's hand up is not full.
He also has a card on.
Yeah. And then Robert.
I don't know how close we are to the seven, is it, that we're allowed to have?
We have nine is a quorum, so we have to have less than.
And we've never had more than four at any one of our meetings.
Yeah, so I mean,
if somebody is desperate to be on the meeting, I'd be more than willing to step aside to allow that.
Position.
Richard, is my name on there from before? I can't remember.
I have no idea at this point.
Oh, okay.
But it is now.
Do you want to be on it? Okay.
I thought I was, but
if any of you have later thoughts.
You have volunteered and come before.
I've never had a notice of anything. You have received notices. You have been on the committee. But you've been out of the country.
Yes,
out of the continent.
Emails?
States.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all right.
Oh. Again, remember
yeah,
that.
Check, I'm going to check the email address. Make sure he's got it.
I'm still on, but I will be going off because my time is up.
Jim?
Yes, sir.
Please.
For me.
We
please
are.
My first topic is the moratorium update. For those of you who might not have the benefit or the background on what exactly it is, I'll be very brief. It was in the fall of last year, it was determined in response to some of the reports that we were receiving that we were to take a look at our capacity load ratios that we were building to ensure that we were not overbuilding, and most importantly, that we would actually have money to maintain and operate these facilities once they were built. The moratorium was then placed on construction. Construction was then placed on a moratorium. We have released, though, moving forward, we have released approximately $400 million projects, and I'm going to lean on my program staff for some specifics with respect to the numbers in just a moment, but approximately $400 million worth of construction in the last 8 weeks or so. Most of these projects had to do with what we call the low-hanging fruit. Many of them were demolition projects that needed to occur on buildings that were unsafe. Many of them were infrastructure projects that needed to go anyways to support the campuses. Some of them were buildings that were already halfway under construction that we restarted. And now we're moving into a period. The moratorium did several things, and several good things, actually. This hold, it gave the opportunity for a lot of the campuses to go back and revisit what exactly they had planned out and to prioritize the remainder of their projects to align with their budgets that they have. Now, as far as specifics, I'm gonna ask John Harmer, who's my program manager, to John, what exactly have we released? I just want some hard numbers in the last 8 weeks or so.
Yeah, I'll just sit here. I'll make it easier for people to hear me. Just giving you perhaps a slightly broader picture. Back in December, there was 152 projects put onto the moratorium, and that was $1.9 billion. The construction cost for those projects was $1.9 billion. To Jim's point, since then, in February, we released 56 projects, and they totaled about $200 million. And then in April, we released a further 39, which was the $400 million that Jim was talking about. What that's done, at that point of time, that left $1.3 billion on the moratorium. Subsequent to the release in February, because there was conditions on that, as Jim said, that was you weren't increasing space, that you had M&O costs, and you had budget for it. There were a couple of others, but that was the main. And we were given information. We, in fact, in April asked for the colleges to give us very detailed information in those three areas. We did a quick review. That's when the $400 million was released. Subsequently, we've been given more information than we originally had, And we now have recommended, it's not the, the recommendation still under consideration, a further $200 million that fits within the same criteria that we had for the prior $400 million. And we think there may be another $200 million on top of that. Now, that will leave 0.9 billion or 900 million. The first thing we need to take into account, and this is to what the Chancellor said to you, that the money for the reserve will come from the colleges, and so that will be, let's say, 160 million is the figure that we currently have. Let me tell you, we're in the middle now of the risk analysis, literally in the middle of the risk analysis, and in about 4 weeks we will confirm that figure. But for this, at this point of time, we're looking at that 1.6. So we take the 1.6, and we do have some unfunded reserve. We've talked money, I should say, not reserve, unfunded dollars that is about 100 million. That means that we will then have something like 600 million left in the reserve if the 0.2 we've $200 million we've recommended is approved. If we recommend, we think we will, another 200, that will leave 600 million. These projects will require quite a lot of analysis, exactly as the Chancellor said. They are the projects that will be looking for legitimate exceptions, and I'm using his words, and that will be the 600 million. So I would suggest, Jim, give it another 3 weeks, and if we do get back to you with the 200 that still sort of fit into the early release, that, and they are approved, that would then leave 600, which, yes, we'll have to do a lot of analyses on. But whilst we've been looking at this, we've been preparing databases and gathering information, which allows us to make a very detailed and informed analysis about the space at the college, the need for the space, and developing any good reasons why they should go ahead, and to be able to tell the district the cost if we don't go ahead. Does that cover it, Jim?
That did. Thank you.
I love your projection. You have an amazing voice. Thank you.
I'm an Australian. Come on, guys. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And I think it was important to hear those numbers, I think for all of us, because if we do hear moratorium, you've stopped construction, you've halted progress, and that's not necessarily the case. I think you heard some pretty impressive figures there of where we've come in the last just few months with regards to releasing the projects. Now, doing that, we talked about the new process going forward. We've talked about we've got rid of those low-hanging fruit now. Now what is required to get a project off the moratorium, if you will, is a very, very detailed analysis. In which we need to prove that, for lack of better terms, the campus and my staff need to prove that this is an essential structure that needs to be built. And that means oftentimes getting people out of bungalows, for instance, or taking down old buildings where they're sick, and we're building a new building to replace those. And you know, there might not be a net zero square footage, and there may be additional growth required in some of those. But there are exceptions. It's something that I review with my staff, with the program manager, and then review with the campus, and then get the chancellor's sign off in order to move forward on those exceptions. I just wanted to make sure everybody was informed of how much effort goes into actually getting those projects off of the moratorium, and how closely we're looking at that.
And those are allocated by college, I assume?
Yes, sir.
By specific project.
Yes, sir. Okay. And the colleges.
That's part of their initial plans.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And what they've done is they have gone back, and Nabil can speak to this also, is to reprioritize, meaning they might not have the money to build everything that they wanted, but they have to look at what's the important and what's mission and what's critical there.
I really appreciate that. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. And you know, we're making progress, folks. It's a good news story. When you go out, I encourage you all to go out to campuses and look at some of the work that's being done. You know, Camille can scare us all she wants with her legal with their legal briefs, and yeah, that gives such shivers down my spine. But what's really occurring is very impressive. And the campus is, I was away for a couple of years and working overseas, and I came back, and I hadn't been on one of the LACCD campuses for quite some time, and I was extremely impressed with it. Every campus looks much better than it did a couple years ago. Yeah. Next one is a very important one for me, and it's near and dear to my heart, and it's probably really near and dear to our program manager's heart over there, and that is I will be recompeting program management services very soon.
I thought the RFP was out already.
No, sir. Okay. No, sir. It's still being created. This RFP is being crafted with the utmost care, because I don't think there's a right answer. No matter what the outcome is, somebody's going to be unhappy with it. So we're being very cautious as we move forward. We retained outside counsel to assist in the development of that. In addition, we have another program management firm who is not obviously going to compete on that, but another international firm that is also assisting in crafting the duty statements and best management practices. This one may include other services that we didn't include in the prior one. We will be utilizing many of the reports, the audits or reviews, the findings, the lessons learned, et cetera, that we have received from outside folks and panels, committees.
What will be the term of their engagement?
It'll be a 5-year contract, most likely.
Effectively to the end of the program?
That's the idea. Okay. That's the idea. This would be the horse that we ride to the end. And so that's why it's so important and near and dear to my heart. And the better they are, I don't have to work as hard. So it's good.
But you have to watch closely.
Yes, sir. And in order to assure that, once again, that the process is sound, and as I said, we're taking a tremendous amount of time putting this together, and we're tremendous amount of energy, we've sent a letter to the city controller's office to ask Wendy Gruhl's office to take a look at the RFP after we create it, just to ensure that it's sound and it's in keeping with other industry RFPs that are going to be, that are out there. And we're also retaining the services, or we're considering retaining the services of another program management firm after it's created, to ensure that it's, for lack of better terms, biddable, and that it makes sense for this particular firm. I wanted to give you an update on that. What we're looking for is a preliminary draft the first part of July. I don't believe that we received word back from the controller's office as to when they would be able to review this with us. But I anticipate it being out the end of summer.
August, September. August, September.
Yes, yes. But it is progressing, and it's progressing with a great amount of care. My next topic was...
When do you anticipate award? This is the final date. If it goes out the end of August.
You know what, Elliot? To be honest, there's a lot of things that stand between a certain date for myself. I'm relying on some other outside forces to help me with this somewhat. Sure. So I'm really hesitant to give you a date of when we would give the final award.
Well, I wasn't looking for specificity. So 3 months, 6 months. I mean, well, I think you're including negotiations.
I think somewhere in between 3 and 6 months would probably be...
For the final award?
Yes, sir.
Well, that's impressive, I must say. That includes negotiations, net down, all
yes,
agreement on outstanding terms.
I don't anticipate a huge amount of respondents to this particular RFP, although it's going to be particularly attractive. There are a limited amount of firms in the world who can actually take on some of the scope and the issues that we have on this particular program, and we'll be looking for the very best people. And the panel will be composed of other industry professionals. We'll be making decisions on these things.
Fantastic.
Yeah. The next portion, or that is at least is listed here, and I believe it's in your packet, if I'm not mistaken, is an executive summary. This is fairly brief. It tells you a little bit about where we are, some projects that are in place. I'll let you look at it yourself. It has a DSA review, basically what is in at the state architect. It'll come around. The next portion just talks a little bit about some of the recent bid activity. As you'll see, most of these were rather small, relatively speaking, contracts, because the larger ones are yet to come.
And then the next one is also has a lot of Camille's hands on it. That has to do with projects with surety involvement, meaning that we've had contractor defaults or contractor issues, in which case the surety has gotten involved in the in the progress of construction.
I don't cost those, okay?
You're a lawyer. I have to blame it on you.
You have to respond. Don't cost them.
Am I allowed to talk about my alternative delivery?
No.
Okay. Thank you. I won't talk about this.
Okay.
I'm trying to alleviate Camille's workload.
Looks like they came in with a much lower bids.
We're about done with our
time. Let me just ask one question. I, unfortunately, I took a red eye back to Washington for 12 weeks, so I didn't get to review this package. But I will review it specifically with what I expect to see from a couple of samples I've seen, which is increased ability of our being able to understand the actuals and the problems with ongoing construction. I know you're headed in that direction.
Yes,
and I got a sample from West LA College, which I also didn't have time to thoroughly review. But that's the objective, I hope, because then we can do our job better.
Yeah. They're not quite flagging the problems as much as
there's an observation.
I would like to see, and maybe it's just a natural reluctance to say, here's where the world is going to hell in a handbasket. In general, they're wonderful to be able to look at it college by college and understand what's going on.
But to the extent that for us to do our job without embarrassing political exposure or without creating legal problems of any kind, we need to know that. We need to know what you consider to be the outstanding problems or what's being done about them.
Certainly. Would you like to report it in a college by college?
There's
challenges on every campus.
Obviously. Some of these are there. I mean, all of them are essentially really nicely done in terms of understanding what's happening on the college, what projects got released from moratorium, that sort of thing. In their discussion of a particular project, I noticed one of them said there are, contractor holdback issues, whatever. That's the kind of thing I'd like more thoroughly explained. As a project has a problem, a more thorough discussion of what the problem is.
Sure. Absolutely.
You have a comment?
So. Yeah, well, I think I'm just echoing so much you said. We've been saying this for a few years now, is that not only having a summary of the highlights and lowlights of each project each month, because I go through those documents, and I mean, it's quite ridiculous. I mean, I might as well read the phone book. It means nothing to me. But seeing a summary or conclusion, highlights and lowlights of each project, and then a summary of all of the projects coming from your office that says that you've read them, you've looked at them, and here's your opinions about this, and this is what we should be concerned about, or this is what we should be bragging about.
Certainly.
Would be, to me, extremely valuable.
Essential, yeah. Period.
Essential.
That's our job. But I would want to say, though, to temper your comment a little bit, they have moved in that direction a lot.
Oh, this is head and shoulders
see
above what we used to
get.
This is, if I look at Pierce College, this is easy.
Let's leave it at that. We accept that.
Easy to understand.
We actually read it. But again, we have to be in that position of being
able to say. And if you parallel with this other report, if you've got a question, then you have some idea what's going on. But I think, I don't want to say single page, but as much pages as you need being reasonable, that you know what's coming at the end of the pickups. This is what we need. Just the highlights.
Yes,
and on down. And that way we can take these reports and put them together and say,
I'll give you highlights and lowlights.
Yes,
highlights and lowlights.
Challenges and victories.
Well, that's what I meant.
And if you have to air more challenges and victories.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Ed, we're in our last minute and a half. Any comments? I have one comment then. If you can get these minutes out, the sooner the better, especially with help when we have our advisory committee meeting, then we'll have some stuff fresh for us.
When is that meeting?
We don't know.
Okay. He's trying to schedule it as soon as possible. It should be early in July.
I would guess it will be in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Right.
That's a guess. Any other comments?
Next meeting is
August 22nd,
August,
I think.
August 24th.
I
move for adjournment. I move for adjournment.
Second.
All those
in favor? Any opposing positions? Usually not. Thank you all. I think this was a good meeting.
And I thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate you being here.
Well,
thank you. I appreciate it.
I'm a pink guy.
Well, I can avoid being pink if it's got a baby rabbit.
I do enjoy the report, though.
All of them are.